In Carmel, California. This is Friday, April the 6th, 1979, and this is side one of tape number 383. I got a request from a longtime listener to give an overview of history, a one-hour tape, at least, probably 1 hour, with a resume of who is doing the conspiring, who is doing the assassinating, what are the names of these particular people that gained from all of this, how did they get their power, what years were the turning points in their controlling the power, what agencies are involved, the important names. And so in about a week or two, when some of this news calms down, if it ever does, I have enough always just backlogged here to share with you, but I do think it's important to go into that, and I think I will do that for you in about 2 weeks. I think that the real strong conspiratorial ties begin in March 1891, that was just 88 years ago, with Cecil Rhodes, the British gentleman who went to South Africa and took out of there diamonds and gold and set up what was known as the Round Table Group in Britain, and the Rhodes scholars who were educated along his way of thinking that the British should establish a world order ruled by whites, and that the Americans could have part of that operation. They'd put part of it on our continent because it evidently was too large for them to do all by themselves. After World War I, Colonel House was instrumental in forming the Council of Foreign Relations, and we'll go into that. And Colonel House was a man from Texas who lived in England, and Herbert Hoover, the gentleman who brought us into the Depression, who also knew a lot about grabbing gold and oil and minerals overseas, exploitation, became the President of the United States following World War I. The main family behind the American Council of Foreign Relations was the Morgan family. We'll go a little bit into the DuPonts, the Morgans, the Mellons, the Rothschilds. There's a lot of people that were behind this conspiracy, and often Rockefeller's name is predominant. But the Morgan family set up the Council of Foreign Relations, and the Rockefellers donated the building. So in a couple of weeks, we will do an overview. I think that's essential from time to time. Of course, the news this week on everybody's mind is the story of the atomic plant and what went on in Pennsylvania. I don't want to repeat a lot that you've heard in the news during the week, and I'm sure you all followed it closely, but I'll just go to some what I thought were the highlights of the week that I want to remember on this tape and call attention and share with you. Just before the accident took place, this was March 28th, that the leaks began and the atomic plant had so much trouble. Just shortly before that, March the 14th, there was an article in the New York Times by Richard Halloran, Five Atomic Plants Ordered Shut Down, and it talks about five electrical generating plants having nuclear energy that were ordered to be closed within 48 hours because they couldn't withstand earthquakes, that there was an analysis of their ability to withstand earthquakes, and a special committee had been formed to raise questions of the overall issue of disposing of radioactive waste in underground depositories. This is March 14th, just 14 days before the nuclear accidents. Can you imagine putting $2 and $3 billion into nuclear plants and not knowing where the waste is going to go? There isn't a day that I don't see the headlines and realize that this is a totally insane society. And partner in the insanity is any person who puts up with that and doesn't cry or yell or scream and make some noise either to protest or write public officials, call talk shows, and so forth. There are ways of making a voice heard. And anyone who sits back and accepts this will get the consequences of it. It gives me no satisfaction always to sit back and say, I told you so. And on the other hand, I just wonder what's in the minds of people that allow plants to be built without having any idea where the waste is going to go. Another column by Coleman McCarthy in the Washington Post, this is March 29th, an important article, Thursday, March 29th, Nuclear Industry Chased by Doubts. It says five plants were closed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission because of design error. This article, incidentally, was printed one day after the plant was closed down in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. McCarthy said five plants were closed because of design error, the ones I mentioned before. The Department of Health, Education, and Welfare says that the risk of cancer from radiation is more uncertain than ever. A committee representing 14 federal agencies reported that the ease of radioactive waste disposal has been oversold. The opening of the Karen Silkwood case in Oklahoma focuses public attention on both dangers of radiation and possible corporate wrongdoing. It goes into the movie coming out of Jane Fonda, the dramatic story of the uncertainties of nuclear power, the China Syndrome. A television documentary by journalist Paul Jacobs with new information on accidental contamination and government cover-up, which was also followed by massive cancer and leukemia. And the article goes on, the blow-up of dire publicity. All of this has left the nuclear boosters without an atom's worth of intelligence rebuttal. It also goes into the fact that Jerry Brown and Jane Fonda have been talking about the anti-nuclear energy for a long time in California, and they have. They've been wanting to use the solar energy. You would think that the people favoring nuclear escalation would shut up at least till some of the answers of this are in. But, of course, we see James Schlesinger, the czar of our energy group, and John Connolly, and I'll go into more detail on that, public officials pushing the nuclear energy the very day and days after this plant caused so much trouble in Pennsylvania. Another article in the Washington Post, March 29th, that same day, nuclear accident turns a bonanza into a mixed blessing. And this article typifies the human interest stories that were on national television of people who don't know a thing about what they're talking about. They don't know what their children will look like, the pregnant mothers, what the grandchildren will look like, what diseases will come, and if they'll have cancer, goiter, leukemia. The consequences of the Harrisburg incident were not made available when the plant was built, and so they interviewed people. They have one woman saying, I don't worry about it. You see these lights burning in the house. I owe it all to these plants. Another person interviewed said, if you're going to die, you're going to die. Another one said, the plant's as safe as anything else. I don't think the government would let them do anything to endanger our health. These are the kind of human interest stories that were on the news media, and I don't know where they find these people, but of course they're told that it's safe, and when the plant goes up, they get a lot of jobs. Another article, a woman said her husband was a welder, and she was grateful because the money was good. He made $18 to $20 an hour on overtime at the Metropolitan Edison. And the husband said, I've already lost all my hair and I'm sterile, so what else can they do to me? There's something very sick. It reminds me of the Jonestown acceptance of death, the ones that weren't murdered, that planned the suicide rehearsals, that sit there and take it. There's this permeation in the air of death and wanting to die and thinking of suicide, and it could become almost contagious that people give up their will to live. Another article in the paper last week, the town shrugs off the nuclear accident. One family said, we had to accept it when we moved here, referring to the nuclear plant. They said, it's something you could see. Maybe you'd worry about it later, but it doesn't bother me at all. This is a man that has dairy farms there for the Los Angeles Times. Many of you heard those comments during the week. And then, of course, 2 days after the leaks began, there was an article in the San Francisco Examiner, hour by hour, reports of leak keep worsening. And it gives you each hour, and you've seen in your newspapers, the various stories of how bad it was going to get. Another story, contradictions keep spewing out. Well, anybody who studied the murder of John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy or Martin Luther King or many other important murders and assassinations or studied events in history such as the killing of Abraham Lincoln, or even the escape of the Tsars, or the story of whether or not Adolf Hitler is alive or dead, the contradictions keep pouring and spewing out, and new evidence comes in to make the official story look pretty flimsy. And, of course, large article in the San Francisco Chronicle, new contradictions. Very consistent, as I say, with all the other work I've done. Another article follows then during the week. Nuclear plant planners did not foresee the bubble or the design reactor to handle it. This is from the Associated Press. The dangerous bubble that was lodged on the roof was not foreseen when they built the building. That the nuclear technicians were caught off guard. They hadn't anticipated the bubble. They had not designed the reactor to handle it. They had no plans for dealing with it. And Harold Denton, Nuclear Regulatory Commission agent, you saw him on national television, a new superstar, said, it's a new twist. They weren't expecting the bubble, and yet it was built, and the force of the explosion cracked a four-foot-thick reactor wall, and radioactivity was escaping through the walls. Another article from the Los Angeles Times, on-site inspectors urged 2 years ago, but 23 of the 47 atomic plants still lack them. It was recommended by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that they have inspectors on duty, and yet out of 47 sites, there are only 23 where there's anybody checking out inspectors to see what is going on. You can imagine if, in terms of lives and energy, if a plant that's cost several billion dollars is shut down forever, and we don't know how many people have been affected, how much land, the farming area, in terms of millions and millions of dollars plus the billions of the initial investment, if you multiply that times the 24 unguarded plants, this country could go totally bankrupt physically and financially, building these things and then building new ones and backing them up, and not having inspectors that were urged. They were urged 2 years ago, and they didn't do anything about it. Then, of course, there's always the stories, cost of mishap in the millions. The merchants alone lost $1 million in business last week. It's interesting, if the men praise the plant and the women because they're making $18 to $20 overtime, they must take all of that money and go into the little town nearby or into Harrisburg and spend it right away at the company stores, because there was $1 million in business just last week, an ordinary weekday where people couldn't go to work and the town was empty. And, of course, the cleaning up goes into the millions. As I say, the figure now is like $40 million, not costing the medical care, the testing, leukemia, the health care, the animals, or the plants. Just, they're talking about a $40 million cleanup, or dump the place completely. It was a $1.1 billion project that may be closed forever. Mr. Harry Farrell, editor of the San Jose Mercury, has an article on Three Mile Island. He said he has a stock portfolio, and he noticed that his GPU stock was going down. It was an East Coast utility company, GPU meaning General Public Utilities, and then he found out that's the parent company of Metropolitan Edison in the Harrisburg area that owns the Harrisburg reactor. He noticed last week that his stock of GPU was going down. And then 2 days after the stock started going down, he received what's the shareholder's package. You know, those are those slick 36-page books with beautiful, he calls beautiful topography and graphics. And the book opened up to the GPU's pride and joy in Harrisburg, called the High... It's an old hydraulic plant that brought power for 75 years, and now it's described as the most beautiful general public utilities operation in the country, Three Mile Island, Pennsylvania, now completed a $1.1 billion two-unit nuclear station. These nuclear stations will provide 40% of our customers' current needs from one of our nation's most important sources of indigenous fuel, uranium. He received the brochure several days after his stock dropped, and of course there were beautiful pictures and a brochure telling him that they had invested $1.1 billion into that plant, and now they could sit back and enjoy the stock profits from the plant. Another article in the San Jose Mercury on the fault of the plant that was built. The brochure tells how they put this money, $1.1 billion, into this great plant, but what they didn't put in the brochure was six major malfunctions that were to take place just at the time the product was being sold around the country. And I'm sure you've read of these, the feed water valve that had been closed, the electrically operated relief valve that got stuck, the gauge telling the control room how much water was in the pressure valve gave erroneous information, the thick concrete containment wall that was supposed to seal off radioactivity didn't do the sealing off for several hours, the emergency core cooling system turned off prematurely, and then the decision to turn off the pumps on the reactor cooling system resulted in damaging to the core where the radioactive fuel was located. They hadn't anticipated the bubble. They had these great flaws in the system, and the brochure for the stockholders was telling them how great it was. Another article, Immediate Danger Over at A Plant. This came out yesterday, April the 5th, and it goes into the cleanup costs. In Pennsylvania, it said we couldn't expect to find any more cancer deaths than the usual 4,500 for this population. And a town of that size, 4,500 is normally expected, would have cancer, and yet they can't tell how many more over that is normal. Imagine living in a town where the normal cancer is 4,500 for that small amount of population. And this article is the one that said that to wipe up the radioactivity would cost at least $40 million. So there's a $1.1 billion investment, $40 million wipe up, and probably another $40 million in farmland and medical care in following this up for the next 20 years, probably, before they can find out how bad the damage was. And of course, keep in mind that all these costs are mounting and will continue to go on, while just this last week, the government had to have Congress write out some more money because when they sent out the Social Security checks this month, they didn't have money to cover it in the Treasury. We have a country where people are working hard, saving money, Social Security, or have worked and expected. And this country is so bankrupt on the eve of other wars and weapon costs and budgets for the Pentagon, and they had to hold up some money. Congress had to allocate money to make the Social Security checks good this month. So while we're totally bankrupt on the one hand and can't take care of the needs of the everyday citizen who's worked hard and expects his money back right now in return, we can't take care of that, and yet we have to wipe up plans and plans that we had no provisions for in the first place. Another article yesterday in the Los Angeles Times, fatigue to blame in nuclear accident. In addition to the six malfunctions, six or more, at the nuclear plant, it turns out that the people working at Three Mile Island Nuclear Power Plant worked 40 consecutive days without a day off preceding the March 28th accident, and they worked 10-hour shifts. And the Edison Company made the remark that the Metropolitan Edison Company stated, "I'm not aware of any rules applying to the number of hours a person can work. Our regulations are related to the amount of radiation they can take." Up to the time of the accident, they're working 10-hour shifts, 40 days consecutively. I didn't know that anyone in the United States worked like that. I knew they did it in Dachau and Auschwitz and Nazi concentration camps, and I'm sure in the copper mines of Chile or wherever there's slave labor and exploitation. But in addition to the mechanical malfunctions that they hadn't even anticipated, they were working 40 consecutive days for 10 hours a day. I thought there was unemployment in this country. Couldn't it be possible that people work 8 hours a day and take 5 days a week and spread the employment? No wonder the pay is so good, overtime for a handful of people. And yet these crews had these long hours, and now there's a reason to believe that the equipment failure might have to do with their just not being awake enough to understand and take care of what was happening. That, to top all of that, there's an article in the San Francisco Chronicle, customers to pay for 8 plants loss. The customers who will use the electric company, the Metropolitan Edison Company, have to pay the $600,000 a day where they purchased power from an alternative source. Here were people overworked. They hadn't known about the bubble. The equipment had malfunctioned. But the Metropolitan stockholders, their portfolio may go down a little bit, but the electric company stockholders will not have to pay to take care of the plant's loss. No, the people that use the electricity, according to the newspaper this last week, are going to have to pay to get their alternate electricity in and pay for the loss of $600,000 a day to another electric company. That's really putting the salt in the wound, I think. And then, of course, there's the comfort that the Pennsylvania officials had the alternative to go underground, that there's radiation-proof bunkers, that they were built in 1967, that the governor can descend into the bunker with cabinet members, state senate members, and political leaders, national guardsmen, Capitol Police, and others invited by the governor. They have provisions in the bunker. It's underneath Harrisburg, and it's for state emergencies for 240 people. For about 4 days, it's built in case of an atomic bomb and nuclear war or the fallout from nuclear war, and 240 people could always go under. I'm sure it would probably be the 240 people that pushed for this alternative energy, this atomic energy without known sources of waste disposal, that would run to the building first. I may sound a little bitter, but that's usually the way the figures go. And, of course, I'm sure all of you were watching the news closely this week and felt like puking as you read about the energy czar, Mr. Schlesinger, getting on national television just at the height of this terrible experience and not knowing if this place was going to blow up and whether the wind would go all over New Jersey, New York, and contaminate the earth. Well, all of this was going on. The uncertainties were going on. Mr. James R. Schlesinger was asking for more atomic plants. He was asking the president, in quotes, to speed up the licensing by which nuclear plants are made or licensed and resolve the political part of holding up the new plants. He said that they didn't go into the tricky question of disposing of nuclear waste. It hadn't been resolved. But he wants the president to speed up the nuclear plants. I mean, again, this is total insanity. We don't know what we're going to do with the waste, but speed up the plants. I'm sure all of you saw him on television. I have newspaper articles here. Schlesinger urges speed up of nuclear plant licensing. I have friends that watch the news media on TV, and, of course, I'm a newspaper reader because I can't file what Schlesinger says, even though it's interesting to see their faces on the screen. But I can't keep these articles and save them for a later date and refer to them. And at the height of this horrible affair, which is costly in terms of energy and family lives and health and agriculture and industry, Schlesinger urges the speeding up of nuclear plants. And, of course, right behind him is the very man that he had appointed, Dr. Joseph Malam Henry. If you want a biography of him, there's one in the New York Times. He's the man who was appointed the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Jimmy Carter appointed him on that commission to handle this, and his job is to take care of the public and protect the public. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission is an independent agency set up in 1977 by President Carter to review these problems, and yet the New York Times said that Dr. Henry was chosen by James Schlesinger, the same James Schlesinger that says, let's hurry up more plants. He's described in this article in the New York Times as Dr. Henry spent most of his career promoting the expansion of nuclear power and is so committed to abundant nuclear power, he has sometimes abdicated his responsibility to safety. Now, here's a man who was supposed to be assigned to protect us, who has abandoned all concern for safety and was put on there by James Schlesinger, who's urging us to go ahead with plants at a time when he sees that they're not safe. This article from the New York Times said there already are a number of controversies about Dr. Henry's chairmanship of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. He refused to release a memorandum he had written in 1972 and when he was asked to do so under the Freedom of Information Act, later he relented at the request of Mr. Udall's committee. This gentleman is now chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that is set to protect us, appointed by Jimmy Carter and selected by James Schlesinger to back up Schlesinger's desires for atomic plants. Not our needs or our health, but Schlesinger's desires. Another article this week, Argentina pressing ahead for a power. They're asking for a $4.5 billion effort to build four more plants in Argentina to take a swipe at the U.S. concern over nuclear proliferation. Argentina wants $4.5 billion to build four more atomic plants. They have nuclear power right now in Latin America, and Brazil and Mexico are building plants. Chile, Peru, and Uruguay have experimental plants, but Argentina wants more. Maybe that would be one way to get rid of the Nazis in Argentina, except I'm sure they've built their bunkers there too, and they could get rid of the natives, just leak the stuff out like Hiroshima or Nagasaki, get rid of the natives, and then have the rest of the country to yourself. They want more nuclear energy, and they flaunt it at the time of this accident. Give us more, we need more. Good luck. And then, of course, the drug companies always get into the act, the Nuclear Act. An article from the San Jose Mercury, quotations from the New York Times, search for a drug underscores the lack of nuclear preparedness. Huge Air Force C-130 jet transports went from Scott Air Force Base in Belleville, Illinois, to a laboratory in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, bringing little bottles of potassium iodide. People in Pennsylvania are to take two drops a day, but they didn't have enough immediately for the residents of the area. This is to avoid cancer of the thyroid gland. The Federal Bureau of Drugs got in touch with two pharmaceutical companies, the Air Force, the Army, the state police in two states. They got chartered jets and a company in New Jersey that makes droppers. They had 250,000, just the right size in stock, and they rounded up the Mallinckrodt Incorporated of St. Louis, Mallinckrodt of St. Louis, and a plant, Decatur, in Illinois, and then they had 11,000 one-ounce bottles on the way to Pennsylvania. Park Davis and Company in Detroit is making some more of the drugs. They didn't have enough little bottles, so they sent it in 55-gallon drums. And another 93,000 one-ounce bottles were filled. Doherty Brothers, a major manufacturer of medicine droppers, was reached in New York City. There were 210,000 medicine droppers available by an army truck. 40,000 followed Monday. And now the medicine is being administered to persons working in the plant. And they have contingencies to get these one-ounce family bottles given each member of the family. Take two drops, one for children a day for 10 days. Professor Frank von Hippel, a physicist at Princeton, is studying the consequence of nuclear accidents, and he met with the governor of New Jersey, and they're recommending that they get some of these drugs and stock them up. When I study the Nazis in America and Project Paperclip, I'm always interested in where those Nazi doctors and scientists went, and as you read these subjects, you see a preponderance of German names involved in this. I don't know if it's coincidental or I'm paranoid whether they come from Germany or not, but the Mallinckrodt Corporation and Professor Frank von Hippel and many other names throughout this. I wonder if they are related to the original Project Paperclip that brought the Nazis to this country after World War II. We never get a list of the 572 doctors who were brought in the United States. I've wanted one for years, and I'd like to know where they are today and what drug companies they work for. And then just see if their names cross over into any of these accidents that we're having or any of the so-called cures that bring up these drugs. And again, in the nuclear subject, John Connally called for a speed-up of end plants. This was just days after the Harrisburg incident started. He said the environmentalists put constraints on the construction of nuclear power. This is from the Houston Post. And he's talking to a convention of national roofer contracts. That's very important for roofers who also make solar energy. And he tells them that we have to have nuclear energy. And, of course, the polls last week at the same time that John Conley was speaking 3 days later put him third of GOP hopefuls. First Reagan, then Ford, and then John Conley. And that same week that he was third in the polls, he was pushing the speed up of end plants. There's such a contradiction here between the facts and sanity and the pushing of certain people for this in spite of the dangers that I just can't comprehend what's in their heads. In the Conley article, there's some other little pointers that are important in case you're thinking of voting for John Conley for president or Ronald Reagan. They're sympathetic to these points, and he brought them out in his speech. Conley criticized the nation's legislative branch for much of the major legislation of the past decade, which he would like to get rid of, including, one, the Equal Pay Act of 1963, two, Age Discrimination Employment Act, three, Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA, that protects us, four, the National Labor Relations Act, five, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and six, the Freedom of Information Act. If you elect John Conley or Ronald Reagan, you can be sure that all six of these will be changed immediately, and he's third in line of popularity of the candidates for the Republican Party, and he threw in these six items, which of course would have to go if he were president of the United States. So much for the Harrisburg incident.